they just reached the Capitol again.
Stay down! Down!
Get down under your chairs if necessary, so we have folks entering the rotunda and coming down this way. So we'll update you as soon as we can.
We're going to walk down and I'll be there with you.
Authorities say the dead include a woman who was shot by U.S. Capitol Police, as well as three others who died in medical emergencies.
Threatening the safety of duly elected officials. It's not protest. It's insurrection. I call on this mob to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward.
Call it off. The election is over.
The behavior that we are witnessing is shameful, unpatriotic, and above all, it is unlawful.
A West Virginia lawmaker was among the supporters of President Trump who stormed the U.S. Capitol.
As the violence raged, aides urged him to respond, and he reluctantly tweeted his backers should stay peaceful, and then posted a video message.
We love you. You're very special.
One of the great outrages in American history.
Facebook's vice president of integrity said the video contributes to the risk of ongoing violence.
Was removed by Facebook and Twitter.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt.
I think Donald Trump probably should be brought up on treason for something like this. This is how coups start.
To those who engaged in the gleeful desecration of this, our temple of democracy, American democracy, justice will be done.
It was the saddest day I've ever had is serving as a member of this institution.
Criminal behavior will never dominate the United States Congress.
This will be a stain on our country, not so easily washed away.
The votes for President of the United States are as follows. Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 232 votes.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and I'm back early from my break for a very heavy day in American history. The insurrectionist mob of Trump supporters that stormed the Capitol yesterday should have been a surprise to no one. Yesterday's events were the logical culmination of a long history of violence in this country, but especially under President Donald Trump. Under the Trump administration, we have witnessed the encouragement and the enabling of mobs of mostly white insurrectionists drunk on conspiracy theories and lies about the election spouted from the highest office in the land. From far-right so-called militia groups threatening to overthrow and capture government officials in Michigan, to a lone gunman who killed 23 people in El Paso, Texas last summer, yesterday's events should leave no doubt that in the United States, we have a domestic terrorism problem. Will Sommer is a politics reporter at the Daily Beast following conservative media, and he was outside the Capitol building yesterday. Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Will, who was on the ground yesterday? Who were these people? What do we know about them so far?
Sure. I mean, so the protesters outside and the rioters inside were sort of a mix of people. I mean, we have some people who are, you know, what you might think of as kind of run-of-the-mill, if hardcore Trump supporters. We have militia members. We, you know, QAnon supporters and just straight up white supremacists as well.
How long had this event been planned, Will? This was not a spontaneous protest.
No, it wasn't at all. I mean, this had been planned at least since mid-December, the last time the protesters were in D.C. And, you know, they didn't succeed in what their attempt to overthrow the election then. So, you know, the chatter about this has been going on for weeks. And, you know, people were very open about online about their plans to breach the Capitol and, you know, even take hostages.
And yet law enforcement, and we're talking about this later in the show, the specifics of where and whither law enforcement, but there was no one there. At least it appeared. Now, you were there. What did you see?
Sure. Yeah. So I was initially on the east side of the Capitol, and there were, you know, really just a handful of Capitol police outside for what was, even before Trump's speech ended at the White House, was, you know, a couple thousand people. But I knew there would be likely tens of thousands more coming. And I thought, geez, there should be a lot more police out here. And then, you know, on the west side, they breached what were sort of out exterior. They covered sort of a lawn, and I thought, okay, that's like not that big a deal. But then suddenly, just thousands of people surged in, and they were just calling for one another to just come up and just start laying into the Capitol Police. I mean, it really was chaos. There was tear gas. There were flashbangs being thrown around. So eventually, of course, they breached the Capitol.
They breached the Capitol, and they went inside and were, I think what was stunning to all of us, so many of us, maybe not all of us will, but was just how easily they were able to get in to the Capitol and how easily they were able to access offices and personal equipment that is used, you know, files and computers. And there is an image of someone sitting at Nancy Pelosi's desk with his feet up on the table. I mean, how was that able to go down? What was the mood of the crowd at that point?
I mean, the crowd was furious. I mean, that's certainly clear. I mean, they were, you know, I mean, I think what's startling about the poor police response here is that it was clear that there was a focal point, which was the Capitol, and that there was going to be a time the crowd got really rowdy, which was when the vote started to be counted by Congress and Mike Pence did not go along with some harebrained scheme to have a coup. But I don't think anyone anticipated that the Capitol Police would perform so poorly. I mean, certainly in post 9/11 Washington, so many of the federal buildings we think of as very locked down, and to get anywhere near them, you're under police and law enforcement scrutiny. It's just completely baffling what happened here.
Well, is it accurate? I mean, we saw images and out of Washington that showed, at least from what we could see, security, maybe potentially law enforcement, opening the gates to the Capitol for these folks to access, the insurrectionists to get in.
You know, I do think there's been some dispute over that video of its meaning. I mean, I think it can be a little it's a little unclear whether they were opening the gates or whether they were sort of like trying to tug on them to keep protesters from overtaking the gates. But certainly, I think at the point where what is clear is that inside the Capitol after the breach, Capitol Police were taking selfies with the protesters. I mean, these are white supremacists who some at least certainly had plans to take hostages and maybe even kill our elected lawmakers. And the idea that the Capitol Police are just palling around with them, I think, is disgusting.
I think what we should also note is that I think it depends on who the law enforcement was. There was an image of a black Capitol Police officer running up a flight of stairs as the mob descended upon him, and he was by himself. Did you notice any differences in terms of who the law enforcement representatives were and how they were interacting with the crowd, with the insurrectionists?
Yeah, you know, I really wasn't close enough to identify individual officers, but I do think, I mean, that scene you talk about where you have, you know, just this mob of Trump supporters, many of them in QAnon conspiracy theory gear, and of course, QAnon is all about essentially Trump mass murdering his enemies, you know, facing off with this one black police officer who's completely overwhelmed. You know, it's a very striking one, and I think really sort of sums up the level of chaos that took place yesterday.
Will, how many of these groups, I mean, the federal government, well, I should say the national security apparatuses we have here in this country, including the CIA and the FBI, have been clear, at least prior to this, that domestic terrorism is a problem. They have noted that, and yet this happened. How many of these groups are being watched by federal law enforcement at this point?
Sure. I mean, certainly during the summer, it's been a very tumultuous summer last year. And we saw a lot of these extremist groups, particularly the so-called Boogaloo people who were certainly there yesterday. But these Boogaloo people who say they want a second American Civil War, they appear to have been infiltrated to some extent by the FBI because there were a series of indictments against them. Of course, the plot to rush the Capitol yesterday is very reminiscent of the plan to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, which also included a plan to rush the Michigan State Capitol and take hostages. So we know that the FBI and presumably other law enforcement are tracking these groups. The question is why no one did anything yesterday, because there were, you know, again, I mean, this stuff was all out in the open. There were people who were just following this stuff as amateurs. There were reporters just tweeting like, so the plan is to rush the Capitol. And, you know, law enforcement either didn't know or didn't care.
I don't know if they didn't know. I mean, like you're saying, whether or not they cared is a question that we're going to explore later. But Will, you've covered these groups for a while, and I've been shocked at the media, frankly, response to how surprised people are by what is happening in front of them. I look at this as the logical culmination of events that did not start under President Trump, but have certainly been enabled by the president. And I'm wondering how dangerous and widespread are these groups right now, given the fact that they have been aided, abetted, and enabled by the highest office in the land?
Sure. I mean, certainly, I think all of these groups right now feel very empowered by Trump, you know, during his speech when he was saying, you know, he's saying, go down, march down to the Capitol, protest this. You know, obviously, there's a lot of different factions here. There are the white supremacists. There are these militias. But what I think might be most concerning is just how this idea has sort of really seeped in abroad across the broader, more mainstream right that, you know, if the election doesn't go your way, it must be fraudulent. And, you know, then you sort of have the right to do whatever you want in response. You know, Trump, we know, has sort of has effectively endorsed QAnon believers whose entire theory is premised on a sort of a fascist takeover of the government. So I think this kind of ideology is really kind of taking hold on the right. And, you know, it's very disturbing.
You mentioned the word fascist. A lot of people have been tiptoeing around that and whether or not President Trump has represented some sort of authoritarian prototype here. What are your thoughts on that? You've covered this community of insurrectionists and white supremacists for years now. What are your thoughts on what this really is defined as at this point?
Sure. I mean, look, certainly not all Trump supporters are fascists. I wouldn't want to say that. But I think this vanguard that stormed the Capitol, I mean, it really, you know, if you saw this happen in another country, there's no better textbook definition of fascism than, than a group trying to launch a right wing authoritarian dictatorship by interfering with the transfer of power. And, you know, these are groups that, you know, they have sort of different fantasies about the world they want to see, but they're all sort of premised on the idea of a violent purge of their enemies on the left and in the media and culture, and sort of a strongman leadership under Trump.
We'll be watching how this unfolds. This is definitely not the end of the conversation. Will Sommer is a politics reporter for The Daily Beast who follows conservative media. Will, stay safe out there, and thank you so much for your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Peggy Thatcher Agloo, calling from Portland, Oregon. Tonight, I am appalled and dismayed and so saddened by what I see transpiring in Washington, D.C. But on the other hand, I am so excited with the successful election of Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff from Georgia to the United States Senate. I really see a new dawn. Let's all build a better United States of America. It seems now like so much progress and inclusivity and a better country can happen.
This is Elizabeth Watson from Berkeley, California. I am sad and scared for our country when I see the flagrant disrespect for order and for the safety of themselves and others as I watch the protesters attempting to take the Capitol. It is tempting to lose hope for our future. I long for the day when we can return to reasoned discourse and when differing ideas and approaches are the fuel that feeds new ideas. These people must be stopped, and then we must win them back. Back to feeling a part of a country that is indeed for all of us. And we must never mistake free speech, protest, and making our voices heard in our public places with violence. It's time to move on. It's time to heal.
This is Ike Rayford from Sioux City, Iowa. As I look at what's going on in D.C., the only thing that comes to my mind is it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
As a largely white insurrectionist mob stormed the Capitol building yesterday in Washington, D.C., the question on many Americans' minds was, where are the police? Security in federal buildings, including the U.S. Capitol, is extraordinarily tight on an average day. So why did we not see what we usually see when Black and Brown Americans protest? Instead, what we saw were police standing by as insurrectionists stormed the Capitol gates, holding them gently by the hand to escort them off Capitol steps, and even taking selfies. Mark Claxton is a retired detective with the New York Police Department, and he joins me now. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Mark, when it comes to securing the U.S. Capitol building, what's supposed to happen that didn't happen yesterday?
You're supposed to assume complete control of the movements and the actions inside the actual footprint of the building itself. You're supposed to be aware of any possible or potential threats that could exist and to respond appropriately if you're professional law enforcement. What we saw yesterday was really a surrendering of the power and authority that they've been given as a professional police. And at this point, to be honest with you, there should be a huge question as to whether or not the Capitol Police is a professional police organization, because what occurred yesterday was inexcusable.
There were so many things that were happening. I know people kept tweeting about, like, where is law enforcement? The first thing I noticed was, having covered some of these conflicts, particularly when black and brown protesters are taking to the streets, I've been in front of militarized police and tear gas and the like. I did not see a heavy militarized police presence for quite some time, if at all, until the curfew went into effect in D.C. What were your thoughts on how long it took law enforcement to actually assemble?
Well, aside from the shock and trauma of witnessing in real time this socio-political revolution, the idea that the police planning and response was wholly inadequate was obvious. It was on display for everyone to see. But I think it's important for us to deal with this realistically and to be honest about it. And this is based on my professional experience and my observations yesterday. There had to be some complicity on a high level with the Capitol Police, with those insurrection actors, with those rioters, with those terrorists. There's no way. You can't even try to be that bad. I mean, it was just absolutely unacceptable. The intelligence gathering, which was not tricky in this case because there were weeks of notice and warning. Everyone was aware that there was going to be some interaction and high potential for violence on the 6th, because they were saying it in every media outlet you could possibly imagine. So let's deal with, or let's address, or let's at least recognize that there is some complicity on the part of law enforcement when dealing with white domestic terrorists and these riot and insurrection actors.
You know, Mark, there's a case that some people have raised which stands in stark juxtaposition to what we witnessed yesterday. There was a 2013, a black woman named Miriam Carey was shot to death by Secret Service and Capitol Police for apparently trying to breach security perimeters at the Capitol, even though it wasn't clear, you know, what was really happening here. Miriam Carey is a black woman. Was a black woman who was killed by these officers, and yet yesterday happened. I cannot square those two events, Mark. I have been into government buildings in D.C. I know how hard it is to get in. I'm really shocked, and I think I speak for a lot of Americans who say, how could this have happened? What would the benefit be to the conspiratorial thinking that the Capitol Police actually allowed this to happen, or were they just overwhelmed and underprepared?
They were overwhelmed and underprepared, but let's be clear. There is a huge difference in the response for the Million Man March and the Million MAGA March. And the difference is that you're dealing with a largely white population, and you can't ignore the reality we saw with our own eyes. And we have personal experience with how the police act when other situations occur around that Capitol space for just nonviolent protests and demonstrations, how they prepare, how they train, how they are attired. We had a situation there yesterday where the Capitol Police, which is a relatively small agency, did not ahead of time reach out to the local agencies, the Metropolitan Police, which covers D.C. They didn't have in place the National Guard or some kind of plan in place for rapid mobilization. This is intentional. You can't be that bad without it not being intentional. This is an intentional act. And the difference here in the response is based on race. The same thing that makes it different how police respond in the communities throughout this nation is how they responded on the inside the Capitol footprint. And it's race-based. It's race-based enforcement. It's race-based response. And it's race-based apathy.
Mark, someone tweeted that this was the fact that many of these people were able to get into the Capitol itself, into the chambers, into offices, was really the epitome of white privilege, as one tweeter put that. And I'm wondering, are there consequences for law enforcement's abject failure yesterday?
There should be consequences. And if we were dealing with a level surface, there would be consequences. But this current administration, and thank God we're at the end of it, there will not be consequences. What we have to demand is moving forward that there be a professional response and it not be race-based. But I'm not hopeful that we can get this done over the next few years, because these things are ingrained in the institutions themselves.
You are a former NYPD detective, and I'm wondering whether or not you were hearing from your fellow law enforcement colleagues as they watched this unfold. I mean, was it just you and I who were horrified by this, or were other folks who were in law enforcement? Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Others in law enforcement were horrified by it, because when you have that kind of experience, you have kind of a visceral reaction. And when you see things unfolding, you begin to question, why is that happening? How could they not be prepared when all of us were expecting this thing to take a nasty turn? So I think across the board, professional law enforcement, black, white, whatever, looked at it from a strategic and tactical standpoint and saw that it was an abject failure, wholly inadequate, and a complete failure. And a head should roll right from the top. Everybody should head should roll as a result of that response. And I think that's across the board. And that's based on my conversations with law enforcement professionals, you know, with several years of experience, wide-ranging experience, disorder control experience. I mean, what happened there at the Capitol for New York police would not be unusual. So there's a certain experience and understanding that we have. And when we watched that, what we saw was a surrender. And you have to look at it and say that there was some level of complicity with some members of that Capitol Police that allowed that thing to get out of control in the way in which it did.
I was just going to say, I mean, we know of one woman who was shot and killed by Capitol Police. At least that's what we understand so far. But what is law enforcement supposed to do in this instance? And I ask that, you mentioned the NYPD, who recently were told they were too forceful with protesters over the summer. So it feels like law enforcement, when it comes to black and brown protesters or protests that are about social justice and civil rights, law enforcement puts all of their energy behind that and trying to, quote unquote, control that. And yet these folks literally stormed what was supposed to be one of the most secure buildings in our country with ease. There's something wrong with this picture in terms of the ability for law enforcement to manage these types of events. How is that possible at this point, Mark?
Well, you have to start off with a commitment to ensuring the safety and security of what it is that you're supposed to be securing. So if it's a property, you have to plan ahead of time. Everything in law enforcement has to be pre-planned. You have to prepare worst case scenario. You have to work through the possibilities or the probabilities. You have to have the necessary resources in place before the events take place. That's just the ABCs of law enforcement. So you kind of over-prepare just in case the worst case scenario takes place. What we saw there was, it seemed as if they purposely underprepared so that they would have an excuse to be overwhelmed. There was no plan in place. There was no coordination with additional agencies. They didn't pull in additional resources, obviously. So it was a total planning failure. This was an easy intelligence gathering operation, and mainly because the MAGA people were talking about this for weeks. The president himself was talking about what was going to happen on the 6th. Rudy Giuliani was talking about it. Everyone was talking about it. It was no mystery. It didn't just happen by surprise. Everyone fully understood that there would be a demonstration on the steps of the Capitol on the 6th. So intelligence gathering was easy. It's a ground ball. Then it's a matter of making a threat assessment. Here's where bias destroys you. Because if you don't perceive white terrorists in the same way that you perceive black demonstrators and protesters, then you don't prepare accordingly. And if you assess the threat as minimal because they are white domestic terrorists, you don't prepare to really respond, and you have unnecessary loss of life. And the risk, not only to the public, our government instructions, our government officials, but to the frontline police officers as well. Those people who are not complicit, who are just manning a post and doing their jobs. And so the failures and the complicit behavior, which is obvious to me, jeopardize not only government officials, citizens, you know, property, but also the frontline police officers in the Capitol Police Department. Unacceptable on every level.
Mark Claxton, retired NYPD detective and friend of the show, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And since yesterday afternoon's insurrection at the Capitol building, you've been sharing your reactions, your fears, and even your hopes for the future with us.
Hi, my name is Lachelle Curry in Wichita, Kansas. I'm feeling pretty overwhelmed with all of the things going on in D.C. right now. I've never seen anything like this before. I'm 30 years old. I have grandparents who lived through the civil rights movement, and I've heard a lot of things, you know, from the state of Mississippi, but this is outrageous.
This is Liz from Encinitas, California. The events of January 6th were a reminder to all of us that we cannot just carelessly assume democracy will always be with us, that we have to affirm it and fight for it every day and in every election. And we have to inform ourselves. My biggest fear is that millions of people are no longer able to separate fact from fiction.
Hi, this is Leif calling from Anchorage, Alaska. What I saw today from members of the so-called Law and Order Party was absolute lawlessness. It will take humility from those on the right to back down from their extreme views and conspiracies, and it will take humility from those on the left to forgive them and listen to their legitimate concerns. I was also frankly shocked by the lack of preparedness by law enforcement, and I shudder to think of what would have happened if the protesters were any race other than the white mob that they were.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm calling from Bergen County, New Jersey. I'm a Republican. I'm a white woman. I'm heartbroken. Our country, it's not only with Trump. It's becoming from a long time. If there's demonstration from the left, they're socialist and communist. If there's demonstrations from the right, they're patriots. Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, all of them should resign today because they've been stoking that fire. Our children depend on our country.
This is Julie Motz, and I live in Fairfax, California. The rioting made me realize how dangerous it is for any group of people in our country to feel so disempowered that they have to resort to violence. And how dangerous it is to have a president who secretly feels like a victim himself and wants to foment violence among other people who feel like victims.
Hi, my name is Sam, and I am in North Carolina. I'm gay, and I have a wonderful partner of 7 years. However, he has taken a right turn these past few months, and because of the misinformation and lies propagated by the right, I am now in my car outside of my condo that he and I reside in because he will not listen to reason. This is how our so-called leaders flippant disregarding information that tears families apart. Please, this has got to stop now.
So how am I feeling about the future of our country after today's riots? Counterintuitively, I feel hopeful for our future because there are people who are saying no, who are standing up and saying this is not okay. We have a more diverse legislative body than ever, and if we can put laws into action to protect and uplift people, then we're heading in the right direction.
I think everybody knows that, especially the white supremacist, nationalist, Trump cultist terrorists, that they're the only group who could have gotten away with doing what they did today, storming the Capitol, and not even worry about their physical safety. And it's just appalling and scary to think about what would have happened if it were any other group of people.
Thanks for all your thoughts on a very difficult moment in American history. And if you want to weigh in, you can record a voice memo and send it to us at takeawaycallers@gmail.com, or you can call us at 877-869-8253. We'll have more coming up on The Takeaway. Stick with us. For many people watching yesterday's attack on the Capitol, the lack of law enforcement was stunning, especially for Black and Brown Americans who are routinely met with brute force, militarized police tanks, and tear gas during protests for civil rights and social justice. Many people of color I know shared the trauma of watching enraged white men and women storm the Capitol with nary an officer in sight. The insurrectionists entered offices with the ease and braggadocio that can only come when you know there will be few, if any, consequences. And in a cruel twist of fate, after the insurrectionists dispersed, it was the largely Black and Brown janitorial staff who were left to literally clean up the mess. And this all happening in a building that was built on the backs of slaves. Here to discuss this and a lot more is the Reverend Dr. Robert M. Franklin, Jr., a professor at Emory University's Candler School of Theology, and Rashad Robinson, the president of Color of Change. Rashad and Reverend Franklin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Rashad, your reaction to yesterday's events?
Well, my reaction to yesterday's events is a reminder that this is not a mistake. It's not an accident. This is a result and a consequence of decisions, of the lack of accountability, of all of the ways in which white nationalists and white supremacy has been able to control police departments and police forces. And if people are feeling uncomfortable with that language, and I want people to recognize that in 2015, an FBI report actually called this out. And called out the infiltration in local law enforcement and national law enforcement of these affinity groups to white supremacy. And so the fact that this has not been dealt with, the nature in which everyone felt so comfortable with these rioters going into the sacred halls of democracy recognizes that this will not be an easy problem to solve, and that this problem that so many of us are watching is a result of choices that were made.
Reverend Franklin, your reaction to what unfolded at the Capitol yesterday?
You know, George Orwell, the writer, once said that we have now sunk to such depths that the first duty of intelligent men and women is to restate the obvious. And I think this is a moment of reckoning for all of America, a time to restate what is obvious. What are our first principles, our most deeply held values? Tanzina, I love the way you began this program as you talked about the sense of arrogance, entitlement, braggadocio of those who marched in yesterday. And fortunately, the entire world watched that spectacle. And I think many were offended by it. My friend and extraordinary colleague here, Rashad, has just pointed out the kind of hypocrisy, the reluctance of a police response. And I was actually encouraged by commentators, especially non-African American, non-people of color, throughout the recent hours, who had pointed out if these protesters had been people of color, especially Black and Brown Americans, there would have been an immediate, overwhelming police response. We didn't see that. So the good news is that the poison of hypocrisy and duplicity is now exposed, as if we needed another such lesson. And we can move to, and I hope this is certainly what I'd like to talk some about, where do we go from here? That was the final title of Dr. King's last book. Where do we go from here? Chaos or community?
Rashad, one of the images that stands out to me, and I think people were putting up on social media yesterday to really make the stark comparison between what we saw at the Capitol with white insurrectionists and what we've seen with black protesters, really, you know, starting, I would say, in my own experience from Ferguson, Missouri, is there was a photo of a black woman dressed in a green flowy dress, and she's standing peacefully in front of a line of militarized officers. And this was not from yesterday. This was from a while back. But that photo, Rashad, and I know you know the photo I'm talking about, really stands in stark contrast to what we saw yesterday. How do we compare law enforcement response then and now?
Well, if law enforcement, right, is about or says it's about protection in some ways, it's a reminder of who they are here to protect and who they are here to control. When I was on the ground in Ferguson and watched all of the ways in which police officers not only met people in that community as if they were enemy combatants in the places that they lived, but also watch all the ways in which they incited violence, that they sort of engaged communities in ways to take a situation and escalate it instead of de-escalation. We have had a whole lot of conversations since the summer about policing, about de-escalation, about training, about all of these sort of reforms at the edges that don't actually get to the heart of a police force that is not actually here for safety, but is here for control. And so when activists are talking about the funding, the downsizing of police, it's a deep recognition that more money, more training, more resources on top of an infrastructure that is not designed to actually deliver safety and justice to all of us won't solve the problem. And so, you know, in many ways, there's been a lot of conversation of attacking defund or attacking the invest and divest in police departments. But I guess I want the listeners to think about, would more money actually solve the problem of police officers opening up the gates and taking selfies with protesters who walked into the halls of Congress? I want to let people know that I remember, you know, over 20 years ago now, interning on Capitol Hill. I remember being a college student, waking up and trying to get to the Hill and forgetting my ID badge and not being able to get in. I'm 5'3". I kind of look very different. Those guards knew who I was every single day coming in and out for my internship that summer, but they still didn't let me in because I didn't have my identification. I've also had the experience now as a leader of a racial justice organization to go in and meet with members of Congress to testify before members of the Senate. And at each and every turn, there is a high level of security as I walk in a suit and a tie. And so this is not about respectability. This is not about things that black protesters and black people can do. This is a deep recognition about who the police are here to serve and who they are here to control. And unless we sort of deal with the roots of all of that, we will continue to have two systems of justice because that is how the system has been designed.
Reverend Franklin, to Rashad's point, I too have been, I've interviewed as a journalist in my capacity as a journalist. I've been inside the White House for interviews. I've been inside Congress. I've been inside courthouses. And all of those things require an enormous amount of security, with advance notice that we're going to be there. And Reverend, one of the things that has really stood out to me in my conversations with friends and fellow journalists of color and black journalists is that they keep saying, and we all keep saying, if that would have been us, we would have been shot on the spot. Hmm. Us being not journalists, us just being not white. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I teach ethics and moral leadership at Emory University now, but my former job, I was president of Morehouse College. That's the school that produced Martin Luther King Jr. and Reverend Raphael Warnock. And it was a focus on developing and cultivating moral leadership that was at the heart of the liberal arts curriculum there. And I think part of what I am struck by is the absence of moral leadership, certainly in the White House, but throughout society. And so this is a real time for asking, what do we expect of leaders, including leaders of police forces? I fully support the point that, you know, you can put more money into existing systems and they won't make a difference. And that's why the language of defunding police is in part is a scold, is a slapping of the wrist, is a way to not reward existing incompetence. And asking, is there a better way? I spoke to one of my former Morehouse College students who works in the Atlanta Police Department yesterday. And he said, we have to change the culture of police forces. Is not simply the existing systems, but it's and yes, training matters, but we need better quality officers, and we need a tone set at the top. So to hear President Trump stand before the people's house, the White House, and urge people to go down, walk the mile and a half to the Capitol, and to shut them down, to stop this the ordinary procedures of peaceful transition of power, was such an outrage. And I think that, so ultimately, as I think about Rashad's point, we're going to have to talk about the kinds of leaders that preside over government, over our businesses and corporations, over universities, over faith communities, in media operations. And let's expect more from them, and let's hold them accountable, as particularly we need to hold accountable those senators and members of Congress who continue to support this act of insurrection even after yesterday's deadly events.
Reverend Franklin, we ended the last segment by you talking about sort of moral leadership and I would even dare say moral courage. I wonder if the events of this past administration and really the past couple of decades of under Republican leadership, but really President Trump's administration has made that prospect even less likely, that the whatever morality may have remained, you know, is it really feasible to consider that we could have moral leadership right now? And even if we did, are folks going to pay attention?
It's a critical question. And I think that we are now in a time of trying to reconstruct and restore civil society and the meaning of America. In the 19th century, the French observer Alexis de Tocqueville made an interesting observation, quite timely for our time, as we've lived through 4 years of a president calling to make America, calling for people to make America great again. De Tocqueville wrote in the 1840s, "The greatness of America lies not in her being more enlightened than any other nation, but in her ability to repair her faults." The ability to repair our faults is at the heart of what it means to be a good and a great nation. And I think that what we need now are moral leaders in every sector of life who are capable and courageous, as you underscore, to begin some difficult dialogues. Some fearless dialogues, as one of my friends puts it, to have an honest conversation about American history, and about, again, for Dr. King's book title, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community? Moral leaders are people who invite us to become a better version of ourselves. And that kind of work will certainly be done in Congress now. I'm very proud that Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff from Georgia will join the conversation in Washington. President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris will help to form and sponsor that conversation. So I'm actually encouraged about the future. But ultimately, who are the leaders to whom those Proud Boys and insurrectionists respond? And here's where I think holding President Trump accountable, making him pay a price for his irresponsibility, is an act of moral decency by the society. So I'm going to watch that very carefully, what happens there. There should be no pardoning or looking the other way. Behavior has consequences. So I think that's the call now. Step up, speak truth to power. Break the silence on issues of racism and oppression and hypocrisy, and let's have an honest conversation about how we move forward together.
Rashad, I'm curious about your thoughts on the fact that these insurrectionists, and some are even calling them domestic terrorists, have been enabled and encouraged by a lot of our politicians, and not just the president, but a lot of his supporters. And there are people who would even argue that the media itself hasn't gotten this tone right, hasn't really understood what was happening until yesterday, really. I mean, I even tweeted, look, guys, this isn't unbelievable. This is a logical culmination of events if you've been paying attention to the past couple of years. How would you assess the media's role in covering Trump supporters, Rashad, Trump versus, say, Black Lives Matter?
You know, this is actually such an important point. And to build off of Reverend Dr. Franklin's point is right. When we have those conversations in and we have that sort of accountability at the individual sort of level of a Trump, that then has to lead us to new structures, new rules, new levels of accountability for those that build infrastructure that profit off of this, that amplify it, that incentivize and radicalize those that would do this type of damage and benefit from it. And so when you say media, I think it's very important that as we sit in this age, we think about all of the different ways in which we get information and we move information. So yes, there's the sort of mainstream media and the far right media and all the ways in which those sort of channels, those vehicles have created a level of disinformation and misinformation about what's happened, a framing that is can be sort of about both sides, or a framing that takes an incident like what happened on the Capitol yesterday and frame it in ways that are not accurate at all. And then we also have to look at the social media platforms, the Facebooks and Twitters and Googles. And as a person who has spent years pushing and fighting and challenging these corporations to do better, as the leaders of those institutions were buying islands and profiting off of hate, creating, allowing for closed groups, allowing for all sorts of content to live on their platform because it was making them money. I've sat across the table with the leaders of those largest companies, worked to make demands. And what I recognize most importantly is that they do not and should not get to be the arbiters of what type of information and content should get to travel. They have created violence algorithms on these platforms, and then they are profiting off of them. And unless we have rules that hold these institutions accountable, there's actually nothing we can do, because the incentives around money, profit, and growth will always outweigh for them safety, integrity, and security. And so as this new administration takes hold, they're going to have a lot of work to do to make sure the technology that has so much potential to bring us further into the future in the ways in which we can reach one another, be in engagement. That technology is dragging us into a past, disrupting sort of rules and norms that we have created in society, bypassing civil rights laws that we have won and fought for. And so in so many ways, there does have to be a whole level of conversation. There has to be a whole level of accountability at the individual level. But we also need the new sort of rules of accountability, because what has happened at this Capitol did not happen by mistake once again. And it did not happen just because of Donald Trump. There are a whole set of folks, whether they be sort of right-wing Republicans, mainstream and right-wing media, whether they be social media platforms, that have enabled it. And they've enabled it because it has benefited them. It has given them either money, power, or respect. And until we create the new rules of tomorrow that actually hold accountable, create consequences, and take away that money, power, and respect, we will have those that will put us all in danger because it helps them in some sort of personal way.
Rashad Robinson is the president of Color of Change, and the Reverend Dr. Robert M. Franklin Jr. is a professor at Emory University's Candler School of Theology. Reverend Franklin, Rashad, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, folks, that was a big, heavy day of news, and we're really glad you chose to spend some of your time with us reflecting and thinking about yesterday's events. Big thanks again to my colleagues, Cindy Rodriguez and Callie Crossley, for sitting in for me this week and last week. I came back from my vacation today, 2 days early, because I just felt that it was my duty to speak to you about the ugly events that unfolded yesterday, especially as a journalist. It's a critical time, and I'm really glad to be back in my makeshift studio in front of the mic with all of you listening. I want to thank our team this week, Lee Hill, Alexandra Botee, Ethan Oberman, Jackie Martin, Jose Olivares, Meg Dalton, Jason Tureski, Lydia McMullen-Laird, Amber Hall, Patricia Jacob, Polly Arungu, Vince Fairchild, Jake Howitt, and David Gable. And please don't forget to tell us what you're thinking about. Record a voice memo and send it to us at takeawaycallers@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening. Until next week, I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.